And welcome to another episode of Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and with me in studio is Jim Sexton, as usual, and we are sitting high atop our palatial studios in our towers and our whatever. It kind of all came out wrong this time, but we're inside the new Bassmaster Studios. We've done a few shows from here, and we've had a lot of fun. The sound is better. And this time we're gonna have an angler with us. In fact, it's a very exciting story. If you'll recall, last year, the 2016 season, we introduced the Bassmaster Classic Bracket Challenge. Do I have that right, Jim?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Yeah. And it was a mid-season type thing. There was a classic berth on the line. This year, we bumped that to the end of the Angler of the Year tournament, and the top eight anglers just outside of the classic cut at the Angler of the Year tournament got to participate or compete in an event that would offer one more classic berth after Angler of the Year. And this year we ended our season in Minnesota at Mille Lacs, and we're going to get into that a little bit. But on the line with us is Jacob Prosnick. Jacob is the angler that won the Classic Bracket Challenge and punched his ticket to the Bassmaster Classic in 2018 on Lake Hartwell. Jacob, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
So I really want – Jim has a ton of questions because Jim was there in person. He's got a lot of cool things that he noticed, and I want you to talk a little bit before we get into that. You know, you had a tough season, I think probably one of your more difficult seasons since you've been on the Elite Series, and I guess walk me through a little bit of that. What was some of the issues that you were overcoming and hurdles you were getting over this season? What was the general thought that you had when things were over?
You know, I think the most part after looking back of it, I think I practiced way too hard. You know, I think I got too many things in my mind at one time and tried to do them all in the 8 hours that we had during the day, and not making the right decisions was the biggest thing. Like this year, I practiced like crazy. You know, I was on the water daylight till dark just about every day, and I tried to find as many things as I could, and that, I think that hurt me a lot. You know, last year, I would kind of go out and get on a little deal and just let it flow through the tournament, and it seemed to work a whole lot better. So I think this year it was actually filling my mind with a lot of different things. You know, I mean, if catching them on a jerk bait, to catching them flipping a jig or flipping mats or a swim bait, or, you know, throwing fishing docks and stuff. And I think the biggest part of what kind of had a rough season was not making the right decisions on, you know, what to stick with. You know, I mean, that's all bass fishing is about. You know, it's about, you like game plan. And then when you as an angler go out there on the water and, you know, you're fishing the tournament, you have to make those right decisions. And this year, instead of going right, I think I went left a few times when I should have been going right.
Was there a point as the season went on that you realized you had to start making better decisions? I mean, you slowly climbed the Angler of the Year leaderboard. At one point, things kind of got better for you. When did that happen?
You know, I think it was around around the Dardanelle tournament. You know, I ran way up the river, you know, looking for some clean water. And I think I spent about 6 hours one day just idling back in places and looking for a place like Kennedy found. And, you know, there was a little deal up there that I went in, and I had like three or four bites flipping a little worm around some trees and stuff. And I was like, man, you know, I started down the lake and that didn't work out. I think I had one bass at the time, and it was about 11 o'clock. And I said, man, here's the decision. I'm going. And I ran up there and ended up catching, I think, about 12 or 13 pounds. Not a big bag. But I had, you know, I had some good quality bites, you know, that helped me fill out my limit. I only think I caught like six bass that day. And then the next day I ran up there and spent all day and ended up catching like 16 something and made the top 50 cut and moved up a little bit, which I made a big jump in the points in that deal. And, you know, I think that was the point where, you know, I said, man, you know, this is the things you got to do. You just got to. And I don't think I fished very like conservatively this year. You know what I'm saying? I never, like in the years past, I've been able just to forget about whatever I've done and just went fishing. And this year, I think I stuck with like what I thought during practice it worked. And as you know, throughout the year, we had a lot of weather changes, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, practice would be really, really good. And then during the tournament, it would, you know, the wind would blow or it'd be real cloudy, rainy, you know, those nasty days when fish really bite. And I stuck to what I did in practice when it was pretty, and I should have been throwing something different. You know, that was the whole the whole deal. And you know, I had about a 24-hour drive home from Pokegama, and, you know, I thought about a lot of stuff. You know, I thought about the whole year, like, what did I do wrong, you know? And it's like, it's not like I didn't fish around a bunch of the fish, you know, like, you know, at Okeechobee, you know, three or four of the top 12 came from the same area I was fishing. You know, I was watching those guys catch them, and I'm doing kind of the same thing, but I wasn't doing exactly what they were doing, you know, and I never really, you know, I never really changed, you know. I said, well, shoot, if they're catching that way, I'll be able to catch them that way. And that's not the way it goes in bass fishing. When they want something and they're keyed in on something, that's what you better be throwing. And I just never did that, you know?
Mm-hmm. So take us to the Angler of the Year tournament. You kind of turned the bus around.
Well, I got one more question for you on your year, Jacob. So I looked back at your Angler of the Year ranking since you started at the Elites, and it's an amazing set of numbers, and you probably know it, but I'll bring it out for the fans. So I believe 2014 was your first year, and you finished third in AOI. 2015, you finished fifth. 2016, you finished fourth. So your first 3 years were all top five in AOI. I mean, that's amazing. And then in 2017, you finished 47th. And it's so interesting to hear you talk about what you feel like didn't quite work out this year. But just emotionally, how was the year on you? Because you'd done so well. I mean, I don't want to say it was easy, but you know, to those of us watching the sport, you made it look easy, and this year couldn't have been easy for you.
You know, I think what I have learned this year, that I'm not a very good when I'm like really, really under pressure, I guess I can do really good. But when I get to think about things a lot and you know, like going to Mille Lacs, you know, I mean, I live to fish for smallmouth. I mean, live to fish for them. I love fish for them. I think me and smallmouth have a little deal. I kind of know what to look for. I kind of know. And man, dude, they kicked my butt up there. You know, I mean, like they just, I don't have a clue. And, you know, and I thought I had found three or four places like that were going to be, you know, I'm not saying I could have caught 25 pounds a day, but, you know, 21, 22. And just for an example, me and Hank are out there the last day of practice. It's like 2:00. And Hank calls me on the phone. He says, "You about ready to go in?" You know, we always help each other load up and everything. And I said, "Yeah, I'm right out here on this deal." I said, "Just run out here." So Hank runs out here with me. And I said, "Man," I said, "I'm going to finish this drift right here." So we're coming along. And I look, and Hank hooks up with a big smallmouth. Well, when he did, I hooked up with a big one. And I looked down and my Lowrance graph just absolutely went haywire. I mean, there was a ton of smallmouth there. I mean, you know, so I got him in, bent my hooker real quick, fired right back out there, and it never hit the bottom, and another one had it. I'm like, well, man, you know, maybe this is the deal, you know. I tried. I fished 3 days there and never had a bite.
Oh, man. The pressure that mounts, and that's what I wanted to ask is, you know, you came into Angler of the Year at Mille Lacs knowing that you had to perform at a certain level to make the classic cut. What was your mindset coming into that, and what did you think you had to do to make the classic at AOI?
You know, I mean, the thing about Mille Lacs is there's a lot of flip-flopping that goes on there. You know, even though it's just a great fishery, you know, the thing is a pound and a half separates about 10 or 12 places at that deal. And, you know, I wasn't very far out. You know, I think I was only like 13 points out of the classic at the time. And so my biggest goal was just to stay consistent, catch that 21, 21 and a half a day, and I'll be right there where I need to be. And I mean, like, I have words. I don't have the words for what was going on. Like the place I was fishing, Bobby Lane pulls up to me the second day of the tournament, and I haven't had a bite, not a bite. Bobby gives me his rod, gives me his reel, gives me his bait, everything. And I mean, he's catching 3¾ to 4 pounders. And I fished that thing for 2 hours and I caught one 12 incher. And I'm still watching him catch him. And it's not like he's fishing something. We're just drifting, casting across the flat. And right then I knew, I was like, I don't know. You know, I started looking at my boat. If it was giving off bad signals, I don't know. It was like it had blown my mind at that point. But the part about bass fishing is it's a mental game. You know, there's 110 of us that fish the Bassmaster Elite. Any of us can win at any given time. But the guys that play that mental part of it and can stay focused and all that stuff are the guys that that exceed very high throughout the year. And this year, I never did that. I never got the confidence that I needed like I've had in the past, you know. And that was the big deal.
It's a humbling sport, or it can be when it goes that way, and hard to explain.
You know, nothing is guaranteed in our sport. Nothing.
That's right. Well, on to Pakegama. So you finish up fishing on Sunday at Mille Lacs and have to leave right away and head on up to Grand Rapids, Minnesota. How did you approach it? You basically got a marathon going on of fishing days. I added it up. I think it was 11 straight days of fishing when you include the practice days. How did you approach Pakegama?
You know, that I think I told you this. I left Mille Lacs at like 4 a.m. and drove up there, and I got to the ramp and got all my rods and stuff out. And you know, the only time I had seen it was, you know, hearing some people talk about it. You know, it's a really, really good fishery, and you know, there's a lot of grass in it, and a lot of, you know, and then watching the MLF deal when they were up there last year, you know, Ish was up there and Hackney and Iaconelli, and I think Iaconelli actually won the deal. You know, I was like, man, this is my chance. You know, this is the last chance. I mean, either you got to go out there and catch them here. So the way I approached it was, you know, and then if you watched Aaron on that deal, Aaron caught a bunch of, like, you know, 2-pound largemouth and all that stuff throughout that show. But then he got on some big smallmouth. Well, that's what I went to try to find, but I ran into a largemouth deal out there on a couple places that I caught some, you know, they were the right size fish to try to win that deal. And as I was fishing for those, I'd moved out just a little bit and I had caught a big smallmouth, like almost a 4-pounder in practice. And I said, man, you know, maybe this is the winning deal. Maybe I won't get as many bites, but you know, if you play your cards right, this might how it'll play out. And lo and behold, it did, you know, and I thank the good Lord every day. And I thank Bass and everybody that created that bracket deal for a chance, you know.
I mean, Jacob, it's a. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're good.
You know, it's such a unique format where you're matched against one guy each day. And in this one, you got a lead on day one. I believe JVD was your first. Is that right? JVD was your first.
Steve Kennedy.
Kennedy, thank you. That's right.
Yes, sir.
You got a lead on him on the first day that was pretty strong. You went into the second day knowing you really didn't have to have a whole lot. And once you caught a couple of fish pretty quick, you went to practicing that day. And how much did that help you? Did you learn anything that second day that really helped you the next day?
Absolutely. You know, I ran out to a little deep spot and I think I had two and then I caught three in a row and, which gave me a limit. You know, I had about 13, I think I had 13 something for that day. And, like you said, I went practicing and I found a stretch of docks that I don't think anybody had ever messed with. You know, I just was running down that lake and I looked over and I was like, man, this looks right. You know, from where I've been catching them before. So I went over there and lo and behold, there was a good one on every dock. And I actually shook, a bunch of those fish off, including the one that I caught with the cull tag in his mouth. I know it was the same fish. It was the same exact cast. Trip was with me. I threw it up by that pontoon boat. And when I picked up, he would swim with it. And it just was that, it was just that fish that you could tell was a decent fish. It wasn't a little bitty one. The third day when I faced Lefebvre, he jumped out, you know, he caught two or three right away. And I had been messing around trying to catch a big one that morning, you know, because I know Kennedy caught a big one on a swim bait first thing in the morning. So I'm pretty sure those big smallmouth are biting. But I, you know, he jumped out, and then Tripp gave me the update, and I was like, man, I'm going to those docks. And I mean, before, I think it might have been 15 minutes, I think I had 13 something in the boat, you know, and those were the fish that I found practicing on day two.
What was the mental game like in terms of, you know, this is the only tournament of the year where you know what the other guy is catching. How did that affect your fishing?
Well, you know, like I said, it let me kind of go and kind of chill out on day two and go practicing on some stuff that I never really got to look at in our practice round. So that was probably the best part of it. You know, if I didn't know that, I probably would have kept fishing, you know, and I didn't have to burn the fish that Ish did, that Ike did, and Lefebvre did to have to beat, you know, to beat their guys. So I kind of got to save them around, and I think that was my saving grace.
For this tournament, you were the only guy, one of the eight, and I also remember this morning, you were the eighth seed of that thing. So, you know, you were the last guy to get in. But in terms of fishing this tournament, you're the only guy of the eight that had fished the previous bracket. And in terms of sort of knowing what you were facing, how did that help you any? You'd played this game once before.
No, I don't really, because up at when we went to Niagara up there, I never really fished. You know, I mean, I did the first day a little bit to just kind of see kind of what was going on. But, you know, it was eight of us fished that deal. Seven of us were already in the Bassmaster Classic. So there was only one guy that had anything to gain, and that was Kobe Krieger. So I kind of opted out for him to kind of go ahead and move on. So I think I fished for a muskie for a little while, you know. It was kind of fun, but it was that kind of deal, you know. And but I knew the best thing about it was I knew what was going on. I knew how things were going to be played. Yeah. I knew in my mind how things were going to be, how the role was going to be played out, and that to me seemed to. I don't know if it, I think it just helped me mentally. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I know that they're going to give me an update. I know we can ask for an update at any time, but you know, it was mentally exhausting. I will tell you that.
Jacob, talk about last year versus this year. I know that last year was kind of our trial run with this and the format was basically the same, but the timing was different. Talk about the difference in the two and how much different or how much more was on the line this time.
Well, I mean, you know, If you do a poll, if you ask 110 anglers what they're fishing for in a year, they're fishing either win angler of the year, win a tournament, or make the Bassmaster Classic, and that's the whole deal with this is making the Bassmaster Classic, and for everyone to be competing for that, you know, and that it, we got ourselves a tournament, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it was eight of us out there going with everything that we had to make the Bassmaster Classic. And that's what it was, and that's what the tournament's based on. You know, I think it's a great deal, you know, I mean, and holy below the live coverage, I think I got more footage or more coverage in this one tournament than I might have in the last 3 years.
Hey, what was it like having a camera in the boat every day? I remember, a couple years ago, you weren't thrilled to have a camera in the boat, and this one, you don't really have a choice.
No,
how was
no,
that?
See, I was just being sarcastic in that deal. You know, I was just asking a question, you know, and they, I talked to a bunch of people about that, but you know, I mean, the deal is with that live footage, and we've gotten a rule now where we cannot watch live. You know what I'm saying? And this is what I was saying. You say Greg Hackney might be doing some flipping a hot pink jig or some kind of something that nobody would ever think about doing. You know what I'm saying? And then they have that live footage and everybody can go back and watch it. Then, well, man, I'm fishing the same kind of stuff like that. And now I'm going to try it. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
That's what I was asking about. If we could just get away from the anglers, maybe watching it throughout the tournament and, you know, that was the deal because we worked so hard to find something different than everybody else. You know, I mean, there is no secrets no more, you know, there is no going out there and lining up with this oak tree and this cross that's on this bank and, you know, the house that's over here or the two bird houses and there's a brush pile right there. There is no more of that.
Right.
You know, so there is no more secret. So we have to, as an angler, find something that'll let us, you know, excel to the top, other than everybody else throwing a green pumpkin worm, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yep, that makes sense.
That kind of deal. So that was where that come. But I think the live coverage is absolutely awesome. Like, I mean, when it was all said and done, Mercer goes, "Did you hear your phone?" I think I had like 356 text messages in about 3 minutes.
Wow.
On my phone once the deal was over.
Hey, you know, because of what you did for Kobe, helping him out the year before, do you think there was a little karma that came back to you this year?
I really do. I really hope so. I mean, you know, and yes, I mean, you know, Kobe is a great friend. Has always been. We started off fishing the Everstarch together and stuff like that. You know, and this was what was so funny. Like, me and Kobe have thought alike for a long time. Like, when I first started fishing, I'd go to a ramp and there would be a white Ford truck parked there with a green trailer with a number 13 on the side of his truck. And I'm like, who is this guy? You know, I mean, so I would leave, you know, we'd put in at one ramp, then I'd drive to the other end of the lake the next day, and there's that truck again. I'm like, man, who is this guy? You know, and it was Kobe, you know, and we've battled in every starch. I mean, we've won, you know, won some, he's won some, and I've come in second when he's won, but he's just been a great friend, and you know, and it was just something. I'm not only just saying because it's a friend. I mean, I would have done it for anybody else that was in the Bassmaster Elite Series trying to get to the Classic. I mean, I just think it was the right thing to do, because, like I said, none of us had anything to gain out of it other than a win, you know, to add to the resume. But, you know, in times it's more than that. You know what I'm saying? So it was getting to the Classic, because, I mean, it is the Super Bowl of bass fishing.
Hey, when you won the deal last week, you got emotional, and we were all really moved by that. What was going through your mind?
My family. You know, the deal is, that's where I had my first Classic. You know, that Hartwell was where I fished in my first Bassmaster Classic, and all of my relatives, friends, family that I know are from Greenville, South Carolina. You know, that's where my grandparents are. That's where my mom grew up. And that's, you know, that's the heart of their town. And for me to, for the biggest show on earth to go there and me be working the show, that's what was going through my mind. You know, it's just one of those deals where it was nerve-wracking, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, I mean, it was an emotional roller coaster. And I've never done this before, you know? I've never had that emotion, but I think it had all built up and it was finally coming out, you know? I remember when I rounded the corner up there going to that last spot with about 15 minutes ago, I was crying when I was running.
Wow.
And I don't know if it – and it wasn't like tears of sadness. It was tears of joy, you know what I'm saying, that – man, 15 more minutes and all this will be behind you, you know? So that was I just think it was a very stressful, great emotional roller coaster ride. If that makes any sense.
Oh, totally. And I tell you what, you know, we watched the same thing with Brandon Palahniuk the week before, where Brandon won and boy, the tears came out. Mm. And, it's not unusual, you know, to see that among the winners, and it's very moving and inspiring for the fans about how much it means to you. And I think too, in terms of emotional roller coaster, you know, you've worn it out for a week, and you're at the end of your kind of emotional cushion, and it just tends to come out.
Jacob, he mentioned wore it out, and this is something I want you to focus on for a minute. All these other top end sports, you know, when they win the national title, whatever the biggest award is, you see some of those guys kind of get emotional once in a while. But at this this sport for some reason carries so much of that because you're putting so much physically into a season, 9-10 tournaments of 3+ practice days, not counting the time you're there before it went off limits, the 4 competition days, all the travel, all the support that you have. What makes bass fishing, and you know, I don't want that to sound like just something simple. What makes it such a high-level sport and such a the type of thing that demands so much of your time that when you do win, whether it's a tournament, a classic berth, or the classic, why is that such an emotional moment for anglers?
I think it really has to do with their families. You know, I think a lot of it has to do, like I said, with their family, because, you know, a lot of it, this is our way that we make a living to support, to provide for our families. And, you know, when you get to that point and you get down that close, and I'm going to say something, like when you see somebody that comes in second, you know how they get kind of, they're emotional, but they're kind of upset. You know, they're mad about it because they've worked so hard to get to that. And I'm going to tell you right now, it is very, very, very hard to win against these guys. I mean, it's like you're in a den of wolves and they're trying to get at your throat at all times. You know, and I mean, and don't ever think that you go to a tournament where you're going to say, well, man, they're not biting for me today. Maybe it's been tough. Yeah, right. I mean, they have slaughtered them. But I think the more emotional part of it is it's for our families, you know, because they support us all year long. They support us when we're gone. They support us when we're out there on the road. They're the ones that have to go through our ups and downs. And I think that's why we get so emotional, because of them. You know, it's, I mean, like I said, I'm always thinking about my family, you know, even though I want to win for myself, but it's still, I want to win for them.
Jacob, when you climbed out of the cold waters of Lake Pacagama, you said, this one's for you, Talon. And at first I thought you were referring to, the poles on your boat, and I look back there, and you're a power pole guy. And I was like, "That's not those." Tell us what that was about.
My girlfriend's little boy, his name is Talon, and I had talked to him on, I think it was Wednesday evening, and he told me that when I won the trophy, that he wanted to put it in his room. So that's where that came from. I mean, he told me on the phone when I win the trophy, and I was like, man, he's a great little boy. I love him to death. He gets to go fishing with me all the time. And when he told me that, I mean, that's what makes us the drive so hard. You know, like I said, it's little comments like that. You know, there's just a million things that keeps us going. And plus, we're adrenaline junkies. You know, Hackney has told me that a million times. I mean, if you think about it, we're high of high and low of lows in this sport. So yeah, it's kind of like a big adrenaline rush.
Was there one guy that you didn't want to face on the last day?
No, I mean, we're all, like I said before, we're all great anglers, and any one of us that could have dealt. The guy that I was probably worried about the most was the guy I faced in the first round, because Pacagama is not a very fished lake all the time, you know, and I know that Steve likes throwing those big swim baits, and you know, he is a guy that fishes for big ones at all times. And when he come out the gate with that 4-something, then I was like, oh my goodness, you know, here it comes. And, you know, then I think that might've been his defeat, you know, catching that big one right off the bat, because he stuck with it because he knew there was big ones there. But if I had to pick, it was him, because I knew Ish, Mike were probably going to fish shallow, and I knew Lefebvre was trying to fish deep, but he never really got much going, because, you know, we were kind of fishing around each other the whole time, and I had fished everything that he was fishing during the practice deal, and they were all kind of sitting on one spot. So I kind of knew that he wasn't going to be, you know, he was going to fish shallow. But it all came down to one bite, you know. It was one big bite.
Steve Kennedy, I would not think of him typically as a trash talker. But didn't he roll? What he rolled up on you and said something the first day, or maybe it was practice. What did he say to you?
Oh, he told me I was going down. He pointed, like, I'm walking to the boat the morning of practice, and he walks down there too. I mean, he drives, you know, pulls up beside me and goes, rolls the window down, and like Steve's used to be like, "Hey, bud, how you doing? You know, and good morning, you know, whatever." And he said, "You're going down." So. Here's was my thought on that. I'm thinking, all right, he done broke out the trash talk, but I'm not going to say a word. And I'm telling you, it eat him alive that I never said nothing back. Like, he was saying, well, I was expecting to get something, you know, and I never said a word. I just kind of nodded at him and kept on walking to my boat. So it was funny. You know, I mean, I wanted to trash talk. Don't get me wrong, but. It was, you know, with Steve, I think Steve gets kind of a little wound up sometimes, you know, and I think that might have been just addressing that he needed.
That's a pretty funny response, like heaping hot coals on her head, right?
I got one more Pekegama question for you that's kind of off the water, and it was kind of an unusual situation where the anglers and the tournament coverage crew and the tournament staff all stayed in the same hotel. And we pretty much all of us had dinner together every night, most of the anglers. You ate with the Bassmaster crew every night, which was really cool for us. What was that like for you?
It was great. You know, I mean, I like hearing what's going on, you know. I like to hear what's, you know, kind of what everybody's thoughts are. You know, I want to be the best person that I can be. And the only way to be able to do that is to get to know all you guys the best that I can. You know, I mean, I know we get to talk a lot, but when you sit down to dinner, you get to talk about a lot of different things. And I think it was great. You know, Mercer was there and all the guys from Jam were there. And, you know, they were sharing things about, you know, what we can do better and what we can not do and stuff like that. So that's what makes us a better angler, you know, is to be able to, because they got to do a job and we have to do a job. So if we can make it both work out, it makes it a whole lot better.
You know, this is another opinion of yours. I'd like to hear about it. When Brandon was talking about his season and the guys on tour, and that's kind of your on-the-road family. There's a level of camaraderie that's there, I think, just comes naturally with fishing. And he made the comment, and I'm not going to be able to quote it exactly, that, you know, he loves everybody, but he loves to kick their teeth in. And I think that was kind of an example of what the level of respect that the anglers seem to have for each other, and at the same time, the level of appreciation. And you mentioned a little bit ago about how Bobby Lane gave you a rod, reel, and bait to fish at Mille Lacs. And it, you know, that doesn't happen in the NFL, the NHL, or any of that other kind of thing. Like, they keep all their plays close to their chest and don't talk about that sort of thing. Why is fishing so much different in that realm, and how important is that on-the-road support system you have?
I think the reason is because, like, one day they're going to need a favor. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to need the same thing. And you need to burn their bridges. You know, where I think we're all good friends and we're enemies on the water, but we're still, at the end of the day, we're still friends. And I don't never want to have any enemies, you know, I mean, on the tour. And to Brandon's statement about kicking their teeth in, yeah, I like grabbing them by the throat when I can get them, you know. And and this year it never really seemed to do that until the end of the tournament at the end. But they, I'm like I said before. I mean, it's like you're in a den of wolves and you're meat. You know, those anglers, they don't cut you no slack. You know, they're going to catch what they're going to catch every time. And that's the mentality you got to have. Like Brandon said, kick their teeth in every time you get a chance, because it doesn't happen very often.
Jacob, so you turn the page now and start thinking about the Classic. You finished fourth there the last time we had a Classic at Hartwell. You had a great showing. What's your thoughts going into that one?
You know, we're going a month later, so there's going to be a lot of things that could be going on or not be going on. So it's going to be a different Lake Hartwell. But, you know, I've fished there all my life. I've grown, you know, grew up right there. And fished a lot of FOW tournaments on there about that same time. And I got a lot of knowledge about it. But it's, you know, like I said, it's going to be whatever, 52 of us fishing the Bassmaster Classic, and 52 of us are fishing for one spot. And it's going to be a grind, but it's going to be a really, really great tournament.
Well, that's coming soon. In fact, we just had a meeting a little while ago about, you know, the season's over and we're already preparing for next year, and the Classic is one of the hot topics here at the office that we're getting stuff prepared for already. What do you do during the off season to either take your mind off of fishing or prepare yourself for the coming season and the coming Classic?
You know, I guide for ducks and geese down on a place on the Rappahannock River called Biff's Lodge, and it consumes not all my time, but it consumes a bunch of my time, so it keeps my mind off bass fishing. But you know, as soon as I get done with this, me and my girlfriend Sherry, we're getting ready to go up to a little lake up here by the house. She wants to go fishing, so we're going to go fishing the rest of the afternoon. But, like, my mind's always on fishing, and my mind will be on the Classic until we get there, and you know, and then even more once we get there. But, you know, I think I just think I need a break from actually, like, thinking about tournament fishing just to go out and have a good time. And I think hunting and fishing, you know, I get to striper fishing the Chesapeake Bay during the winter and stuff like that. So my mind is full of excitement, just not thinking about bass fishing. But it's come February 1st, I'll be thinking about bass fishing a lot.
One thing that I've heard you say and have started noticing, because you guide in the off season, you're outside all year. Through the winter, and you know, when we hit a cold weather tournament early in the year, whether that's going to be Lake Martin in February or the Classic in March, if we have a cold snap there, you're still rolling around in shorts and you know, maybe not shorts, but you're not all bulked up and carrying heaters out there. So tell us just a little bit about that you know, you're sort of physically ready for whatever the weather throws.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little pudgy guy during the fishing part of the season. Don't get to, we're always on the road and we're fishing and, you know, stuff like that. So probably not in the best shape as I am, could be. But during duck season, you know, I'm going at it hard, and I'm in chest waders at all times, just about every day that we go, and walking around and walking, you know, 400-500-600 yards back and forth to the blind 4, 5, 6 times during that deal. So at the end of duck season, when I start fish season, I'm in the best shape that I'm going to be. And plus I'm in shape for anything that happens. You know, we hunt in the snow a lot, and it's, you know, freezing temperatures, stuff like that. So when it comes to bass fishing, that it feels like it's summertime, you know. It's just, I guess I don't have like the mentality of the guys that live in Florida and stuff like that. You know, those guys, I see those guys when it's 55 degrees outside, they're wearing gloves and stuff. And the reason for that is it's always warm down there. So when it's very cold to them, you know, but to me, it's just like another day. And I think that helps me, when we do have cold temperatures or a cold tournament, you know, where we're going to, it's like my body's already, I'm not thinking about the cold. I'm just thinking about fishing.
Well, what would you say to a Bassmaster ice fishing trip?
I'd say, let's get it.
we've been tossing that around here at the office. I'm from Minnesota, so that's something we do in the winter. And I've often wondered what it would be like to get some of you more southern types on a frozen sheet of water, drill a hole in it, and yank a bass through an 8-inch hole. I think that would be some pretty exciting content.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, have like 4 or 5 of us and have like a little tournament, you know. I mean, I think it would be great.
Hmm. We're going to have to talk about this, Jim. This could be a lot of fun.
He's been working on this for a couple years.
I have been. They won't listen to me, but I'm going to make it happen one of these days. Jacob, this has been a lot of fun, a lot of good insight. We all agree here, the Classic Bracket Challenge couldn't have gone better as far as the excitement and having any one of those guys winning would have been exciting, but your finish was as good as it could have been. So from all of us here, congratulations. We're glad we're going to get to see you in Greenville. Thanks for your time, and enjoy your time off this fall, and do a little recouping before we get on the water again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, we had a lot of fun talking with Jacob Prosnick, who is the last man in for the Bassmaster Classic from the Elite Series. We have two opens to go where there will be two more opportunities to earn. Well, there's more than two, I guess. There's an opportunity at the Nation Championship as well. Right. So we've got a couple classic spots to fill. We'll learn those in coming days. From Jim Sexton, this is Thomas Allen. This has been another episode of Inside Bassmaster, and we'll catch you here next time.